TUC Radio, San Francisco. Time of useful consciousness. Been brown so long, it looked like green to me. The earth is not dying, she's being killed. And those who are killing her have addresses and names. This is part two of a one-hour talk by Jeffrey St. Clair, who names the names of those who are doing the killing. In his new book, Been Brown So Long It Looked Like Green to Me, he gives evidence that the destruction of the environment is a bipartisan effort. In part one of this program, he supports his claim that the era of Clinton and Gore was by any standard worse than the period of Reagan and Bush Sr. The question now is, will Bush Jr. break the Clinton-Gore record? He is the author and co-editor of Counterpunch, Jeffrey St. Clair, on the current Bush administration's position on global warming.
What is the Bush administration's position on global warming? One, there's no such thing. Fallback position number one. If there is, it's not caused by humans. Fallback position number two. If it is caused by humans, it's probably beneficial. So this was the logic they used to jettison Kyoto, one of their first acts of unilateralism. They had a problem, though. The science coming out of their own agencies was in conflict with the policy as articulated by the president and the vice president. So they had to suppress, not one, not two, not 5, not 10, not 15, not 20, 25 different studies on global warming coming up from within their own agency on its economic and environmental consequences. Then they let one slip through. In May of 2002, it was a joint report signed by the head of EPA, by the head of NASA, by the head of NOAA. Confirmed global warming was taking place. It was caused by the burning of fossil fuels, and predicting that temperatures were going to rise by between 2.5 and 10.4 degrees over the next 100 years. That was signed by the heads of Bush's own hand-picked agency heads. Bush is at a press conference. It just so happened. It was one of those harmonic convergences. He has one of his few press conferences, and he's asked about this report. It had to be by Helen Thomas, because she seems to be the only one who asked Bush any questions that ever put him on the spot. And Bush dismissed it by saying this: I've read the report put out by the bureaucracy. Now, there should have been red lights going off when he said that. Remember back in the Reagan administration, Reagan would have a press conference and Larry Speaks, his press secretary, would immediately do a 100-yard dash, you know, to a microphone where he had a San Francisco-sized telephone book of corrections from the Reagan press conference, and they would get them out of the way right that moment. Well, I don't know how this passed by, but for days, no one really commented on the fact that Bush had said that he had read the report, which was about this thick. I mean, it was quite obvious that he hadn't even seen the coloring book version of the report. And so days pass, and I don't know which press secretary it was. They leak out the fact that, yes, in fact, the president had lied about this. He hadn't read it. But not to worry, because he didn't need to read it, because there was a new report in the works. And within a couple of weeks, yes, a new report emerges. This one written by the American Petroleum Institute, which came to radically different conclusions about global warming. They still had some problems in that there were some scientists out there that kept shooting their mouths off. So they took action to simply uproot them. The most prominent was Robert Watson, who used to be NASA's chief atmospheric scientist. He had left NASA to go to the UN, where he headed the UN's panel on climate change. Robert Watson leaves NASA, goes to the UN, he heads their panel on climate change, and he continues to speak out forcefully on the subject. The Bush administration goes to the UN and demands that Robert Watson be fired from his position. And in one of the most shameful, well, it's a first sight, one of many, Kofi Annan relents. And he removes Watson and he puts in a Bush shill into the position heading the UN's panel on climate change. So if you had any faith in the United Nations and you're an environmentalist, never mind an anti-war activist, get rid of it. Now, of course, who's behind the Bush administration? Well, you can say the energy firms, right? They contributed $48 million to the Republican National Committee in the last election, $3 million to Bush, but it was a very good investment. It was much better than Hillary's adventures in the cattle futures market. I mean, they hardly had to give them a dime, let's face it. Why? Because from the beginning, the Bush administration was the oil industry. The real decisions in presidential administrations are made by the transition team. They're made before the administration ever gets up and going. The Bush administration had 48 members of its transition team, which picked the cabinet, picked the top-level political appointees, set the first budget, set the first agenda for the Bush administration. There were 48 members for the entire transition team, not just the energy and environment sectors, the entire team. 31 of the 48 came out of the oil industry. And it's no surprise that the Bush administration is stocked to the gills with energy executives. You have the president and the vice president. You have four cabinet secretaries, the six most powerful White House staffers, 28 top-level political appointees, all out of big oil. My favorite, because I've written about him the most, is Stephen Griles, the number two man at the Department of the Interior. Griles is a veteran of the Reagan administration, did his tutelage under James Watt. His specialty was strip mining, and he developed, with the coal industry, a new strip mining technique, which goes under the name mountaintop removal. And this is essentially, I mean, I come from Indiana. Southern Indiana is filled with strip mines. They're 100 acres, a couple hundred acres in size. That wasn't good enough. Mountaintop removal means what it says. For once, they were being honest. Decapitate the mountains of Appalachia, extract the coal, and take the waste and bury valleys with it. And it was very successful for them. They killed off 15,000 miles of stream. Not just killed it off in terms of polluting it, actually buried it beneath the mountaintop waste. Now, this awesome new technique instituted, Griles left the Reagan administration, cashed in as an oil industry lobbyist, where he was representing the very firms that he was assisting as a regulator. National Mining Congress, Peabody Coal, oil industry, very lucrative career. It's making more than $2 million a year as a lobbyist when George Bush comes calling and says, well, would you like to set aside your lobbying career and do some time? And it's like the draft again, you know, do some time in the Bush administration. And Griles said, well, let me think about it. Let me see if I can cut a deal with my lobbying firm that will allow me to take a leave of absence. And in fact, he ended up cutting a very good deal because he is being paid $285,000 every year, by his old lobbying company while he's serving as the number two man at the Department of Interior, regulating the very companies that he was lobbying for and is still being paid for. Now, it so happened that at the tail end of the Clinton administration, a federal judge in West Virginia, appointed by Bush 1, issued an injunction halting mountaintop removal, saying it violated a host of laws, obviously, and was obliterating the state of West Virginia. The Clinton administration was pressured by Byrd to attempt to overturn this injunction, and they couldn't get it done. They tried. They tried right up till the very end, and they couldn't succeed. Griles' first priority on becoming Deputy Secretary of the Interior was to get that injunction overturned and get mountaintop removal going again, and he succeeded. Offshore oil leasing. Griles wanted it everywhere. He wants it off the coast of California, where you've got a moratorium on it. He wants the coast of Oregon, where two Republican senators put a moratorium on it. They're starting in Alaska, off the coast. They not only want the Arctic, they want the Kenai Peninsula. They want the Gulf of Alaska. Off the coast of Louisiana, off the coast of Texas, even off the coast of Florida, where Jeb Bush himself had to stand up and say, "Whoa, you're going too far. No oil drilling off the coast of Florida while I'm governor." But the big bonanza for Stephen Griles is in Wyoming, in the Powder River Basin, where everyone's fixed on Alaska again for oil, but the big oil rush is back in the Rockies once again. And it's for something called coal bed methane, promoted as a clean fuel. In fact, it's incredibly noxious to extract. And here we are in the Powder River Basin, former home of the Cheyenne, sacred site of the Cheyenne Indians. You have wolves back there now. Incredible terrain. Griles wants 50,000 oil wells to be developed in that basin alone. 50,000. Along with that, 10,000 miles of road, another 10,000 miles of natural gas and oil pipeline, all within this one basin. Now, the problem was that there's a law called NEPA, National Environmental Policy Act, which says for any federal action that has a significant impact on the quality of the human environment, you must prepare an environmental impact statement. Now, be aware, be apprised of this. The Clinton administration was going to go ahead with oil and gas leasing in the Powder River Basin. They had begun an EIS, but by the time the process was moving along too slowly. And it seemed evident that the biologists were going to conclude that you were going to end up violating the Clean Water Act, the Endangered Species Act, and you just couldn't go forward with this type of large-scale production and be within the bounds of the law. Now, it wasn't completed by the time the administration shifted over. Griles intervened and said, "We don't need a full-scale environmental impact statement, which would be multi-volumes. Let's do an environmental assessment." Environmental assessments are 30 pages long, very little consultation, sign them off on with a stroke of the pen. The request came from his former clients. Those were his biggest clients at the time. It was the big project he was working on before he went into the Bush administration. And he intervened, and he's getting paid for it today. It is a kind of corruption that really makes the Teapot Dome look like petty larceny. Now let's get to the vice president. A week after the inauguration, Cheney put together his National Energy Development Group, the Cheney Energy Task Force. They met behind closed doors for 3 months. The identities of the members of the team were kept secret. We knew where they came from. They came from the oil and gas industry and the nuclear industry, but you didn't know what their names were. You didn't know which companies were there. Judicial Watch, right-wing bane of the Clinton administration on John Wong and the campaign finance scandals, actually was the first to file suit to open up those records, much to their credit. Also, the General Accounting Office, one of the investigative, nonpartisan investigative arms of Congress, sued the White House for access to the records. It's the first time they'd ever sued the White House for the release of records. Cheney resisted. He lost in lower court, appealed to the Federal Appeals Court, lost in appeals court, and now has appealed to the Supreme Court, where the case will be heard by his dining companion, Antonin Scalia. And not only are they weekly dining companions, but we now know that just 2 weeks after the Supreme Court agreed to hear the Cheney case, Cheney flew Antonin Scalia out to his duck hunting preserve, the eastern shore of Maryland, where the two spent the weekend slaughtering ducks and no doubt trying to devise a way of keeping the identities of the oil executives secret. Scalia sees no reason to recuse himself from hearing this case. And when you think about it, why would he? I mean, it's quite obvious which way Scalia is going to rule in this case. So why recuse himself? Cheney met six times with Kenny Boy, Ken Lay of Enron, and he said, when questioned about this, just because somebody makes a campaign contribution doesn't mean that they should be denied the opportunity to express their views to government officials. He's got a delicate way with words. Of course, Cheney refused to meet with any environmental group during this time. But he did extend a helping hand to a few old friends facing criminal sanctions. Let's take the case of Koch Industries. At the time the Bush administration came to power, this oil company was facing a 97-count federal indictment, criminal indictment, which meant jail time for their top executives. They were facing $357 million in fines, all for dumping toxic benzene waste in the local watershed and then destroying the documents that showed what they'd done. Cheney decided that the Bush administration should drop all the charges against Koch Industries, communicated this desire to John Ashcroft, and the charges disappeared. Koch Industries, it so happened, had contributed $800,000 to the Bush campaign. They're a top oil industry contributor. Cheney also intervened to squash an investigation into price gouging during the California energy crisis by Duke Energy. Duke had sold energy to California utilities at twice the highest previous rate. Cheney said, quote, a gentler approach was called for in dealing with Duke. On carbon dioxide, which is, of course, the great bane of the Bushites, being the primary culprit in global warming, they saw themselves being boxed in by the science. So they simply decided, again, through a use of the executive pen, that they were going to redefine. It was like a new issue of the Oxford English Dictionary coming out. They were simply going to be a new definition for carbon dioxide, where it would be redefined as not being a pollutant anymore. It's not a pollutant, therefore it would no longer fall under the regulations of the Clean Air Act. That's what they did. About a month later, the National Academy of Scientists came out with a report estimating that that rollback alone over the next 50 years could result in the premature deaths of 30,000 Americans, three times the casualties in the World Trade Center attacks. The man who was responsible for crafting that rule, that magical redefinition, was the second in charge at the EPA, a man by the name of John Pemberton. After the rule change went through, Pemberton resigned his commission, went straight to work for the Southern Company, which is a big power utility company in the Southeast, which had, of course, been one of the primary lobbyists for the rule change itself. Where's the outrage? EPA, then under Christy Todd Whitman, whose husband ran a landfill in New Jersey, the state of a million landfills, buried a report showing that millions of children were at risk for mercury poisoning. They just buried it. Came out from their own agency, they buried it. You get a sense of their feeling, their attitude toward scientists from Gail Norton, Secretary of the Interior, James Watt protege. She's brought hauled before a congressional committee where she pronounces that no scientist or biologist will pull the wool over my eyes. Scientists warned them about what was going to happen to the salmon in the Klamath River, the endangered salmon, if they continued diverting the water from the Klamath River to the irrigation farmers. They were going to have a die-off of salmon. But Gail Norton wasn't going to allow the ecologists to pull the wool over her eyes. And what happened, exactly what the scientist in her own agency predicted, only worse, the largest salmon die-off in North American history. They didn't get the message, or perhaps they did, but they didn't care because they repeated the same mistake a year later and had another huge die-off. Similar reports from their own scientists on the effect of snowmobiles in Yellowstone National Park, on grizzly bears and bison and wolves. More reports from our own scientists, one of which we published, were the first to publish on Counterpunch's website, on the effect of oil drilling in the Arctic on polar bears, snow geese, and muskoxen. They just deep-sixed them. Finally, Christy Todd Whitman, this even became too much for her. I mean, she was hardly an earth firster. She herself had fired the ombudsman of the EPA, who was looking into ties between her husband and some really noxious landfill companies. She not only fired the guy, but she sent federal agents into his house to ransack his house and seize all the documents that he had on that investigation. So Christy Todd Whitman, no environmentalist, she ended up resigning out of frustration. And she was replaced by the governor of Utah, Mike Leavitt. And we ran a long piece in Counterpunch about Mike Leavitt's career. I mean, this Utah is the state with the leading producer of toxic waste in the country, surpassing even New Jersey. Renko, who is the nation's top polluter, the president of this company, was best friends with Mike Leavitt as governor. They worked hand in hand to develop a program called In Libra, which basically the idea was get rid of the federal EPA, get rid of the Department of Energy, and devolve all of these responsibilities down to the state. And while you're doing that, either sell off the public lands or devolve those also to the states where it's easier to sell them off the way it is in Utah. Leavitt, in a previous life, before he became governor, owned fish farms, genetically engineered trout. And the trout in his fish farms came down with the what's called whirling disease, the equivalent of trout AIDS. And there's a question. Did the trout escape these fish farms, or were they intentionally released by the Leavitt family into the streams of Utah so that they could kill off the native trout populations, and then they would get a lucrative contract for repopulating all these streams with their own trout stock. whatever the case, whirling disease showed up in Utah out of Leavitt's trout ponds. The state environmental agencies in Utah began an investigation that led them back to the Leavitts. And as they were closing in, the governor took action and he fired 78 state biologists who in one way or another had been involved in that investigation. This is the man who's now running the Environmental Protection Agency. One more. That's your own contribution to the Bush administration. Ann Veneman, who's running the Agriculture Department. Mad cow disease, which we know has probably been around in the U.S. meat supply since at least the mid-80s, was a looming threat. The person she picked to deal with mad cow disease was the former top lobbyist for the National Cattlemen's Association. And it's no surprise that even after the appearance of mad cow disease in Washington state, the policies of the Bush administration are no testing. In fact, they even stopped testing in Washington state because the policy is being set by the very industry that they were meant to regulate. So you can sum up the Bush administration pretty succinctly, I think. They're putting your lives at risk for profit, and they don't want you to know.
That was Jeffrey St. Clair, author of Been Brown So Long It Looked Like Green to Me. He was recorded by Jeff Blankfort at City Lights Books in San Francisco in February 2004. St. Clair is the co-author with Alexander Coburn of Whiteout and the co-editor of the muckraking newsletter Counterpunch. You can find more information on Jeffrey St. Clair's new book on TUC Radio's website, www.tucradio.org. That's tucradio.org. Look under Newest Programs. You can get information how to order a copy of the complete one-hour tape or CD of Been Brown So Long It Looked Like Green to Me by calling us. TUC Radio is listener-supported and free to all radio stations. Your tape order really helps us stay on the air. Call us toll-free anytime at 877-TUC-TAPE for information on how to order. You can get your tape by mail or credit card, by phone, or on the web. Our toll-free phone number 877-TUC-TAPE translates into 877-882-8273. My name is Maria Gelaiden. Thank you for listening. Give us a call.